Mr. Shaw, Reel 11. Now, if you weren't, if you were, sorry, a watch-keeping officer, what would your day be split into the normal watches, which we've gone through? We went through in, on the other ship. But what sort of what was a typical watch like on the Calder when you were on watch? What were the duties like? I suspect they were going to be the same as before, but if you could just sort of give us an impression of it.
Yeah, it's you'd be controlling the speed. They'd ring down from the bridge, for instance, the revolutions, you know, up to or down to. So you'd be controlling that particular part. And then during the course of the watch, you'd have to check round all the different pumps and valves and make sure there was enough oil in them and make sure that something wasn't overheating and so forth and so on, or see if there weren't any leaks anywhere, and if there were some leaks, whether you could do anything about it right then and there or not. And so, yeah. And also the register, of course, you had to fill the register. They had an engine room register, you see. And when.
Now, what was that?
Well, you had to register with the. I'm just trying to think of how it was actually really organised. In other words, I'm trying to think of what information was on it, but you had to sign it eventually, and then the engineer officer had to sign it finally, but you were sort of I'm just trying to think of what, you know, for the life of me, I can't think of what sort of things were then on the I ought to know. I mean, the number of times I had to do it.
Any other watchkeeping duties besides the register and what you've already said?
Not really, not that I can think of. No, not that you were keeping the engine, making sure everything was ticking over and so forth and so on.
Were there any faults that the ship was prone to, or were the engines pretty reliable?
They were pretty reliable. Yeah, I can't. Think of anything specific. If anything was spotted that looked as though it could be serious, but it wasn't serious enough to prevent you doing the normal sort of duties, well then of course the engineer officer would be the person to decide what was going to happen. And if he decided that he would tell the captain, you know, if it was something really important, and then they sort it out from there if something had to be done, and if you had to wait until you got into harbour, that was it. If it was something that could be done while you were still at sea, and then they would do it at sea. And that's about
it. Now, what would you do when you were off watch? You know, you finish your watch duties. What would you? How would you spend the day in? Well, the night or whatever, in your mess.
Well, it would depend, of course, on what sort of the particular watches that you'd done. If you, for instance, if you'd had, say, the morning watch, come off at 8 o'clock in the morning, he'd have a shower, and then he'd have a late breakfast, and then, depending on the situation, whether there was a lot of work to be done or not, you would then probably, from, say, 9 o'clock until 11 o'clock, a couple of hours, you'd turn to. In other words, do a bit of work, any odd jobs that needed doing. And then in the afternoon, you were off. You didn't do anything. Because you were back on watch again for the first dog, you see. And that was it. It would depend, as I say, on the series of watches that you were having. Most usually, if you were off watch, that was it. You were off watch. And you could just...
What would you do?
Lie around. or write a letter home, or, you know, something like this, nothing, unless something urgent cropped up, or if you had to go to action stations. And that was it.
Now, in times like when you're this period, when you're in the Bay of Biscay, and there was quite a lot of fighting going, there was an air attack as well on the ship. Were you nervous? I mean, you'd been on one ship that had been sunk. You'd been on another battleship that had been hit by a bomb.
Of course you were. Well, I was, put it that way. Whether anybody else was or not, I don't know. I expect they were. Oh, yes. You get a bit, obviously, very apprehensive. As soon as they sound the U-boat alarm, naturally, I'm thinking, what happened on the previous ship, you see, and so you're just hoping that it's not going to happen again.
Was the U-boat alarm? Was it?
I can't remember now. It was different on the Calder from what it was on the Harvester. You know what I mean? It wasn't exactly. They were all different sounds on the alarm bell. There was one for the air, one for the general alarm. In other words, if you met a surface ship, and then the U-boat alarm. Those are the three main ones. And of course, on the Harvester and the Calder, the main ones would be the main two would be the U-boat or the air. The U-boat probably mainly, in the air occasionally, but very rarely the general. You didn't want to know about the general, you know, running into a German battle cruiser or something. But those were the three main ones.
And you were pretty nervous. Did it affect you in carrying out your duty, or were you sort of?
Oh no. I always tried to. How can I put it? Make light of anything to help pass the time away. For instance, down the engine room, because you weren't walking around non-stop all the time, and invent ridiculous stories and use. And very often you'd get someone on watch with you, perhaps a leading stoker, who was as good at it as you were, and between the two of you, and that helped to pass the time away. In between doing all the other sort of things. You know, there were always long moments.
What sort of ridiculous stories? I mean, what type of thing? I don't mean give us an example.
I can remember it, absolute nonsense. I'm trying to think of a good one. This is on the Harvester mainly, but it happened on the others. That there was a... In my watch on the Calder, there was one of the leading stokers, and we were both very interested and highly amused by Basil Rathbone and Sherlock Holmes and Professor Moriarty, you see. And now and again we'd come out all sorts of... And he was good at it as well, you see, and he'd appear from around the boiler, you know, like... Professor Moria, all this sort, all complete rubbish, but it helped to pass the time away, you see. I can't think of his blooming name now.
So you'd make up sort of Sherlock Holmes stories, and
that's right, yeah. But no, it was no, and all, it was complete nonsense, and it wasn't everybody who was amused by it, but he was, and I, you know what I mean? It was, I might say it to somebody, and they say, shake their heads in disbelief, but it had to be someone on the similar wavelength to you.
Do you remember the air attack on the ship, or does it the high?
No, not really. I can remember hear the guns, you know, sharp the guns going, and that was about it. And you just hope for when you're in the engine room or the boiler room, you just hope for the best. You don't. I mean, when you're up on the bridge. I mean, I don't know whether which is the worst, really, when you're up on the bridge and seeing what's happening, or whether you're sort of down below high and you don't know what's happening. But anyway.
Now, So that's all you remember about that convoy. It's not something you remember a lot about the Bay of Biscay. What about, I forgot to mention the refit. They had a bit of a refit in Belfast. Were you aware of that? Or, you know, just before, you know, to sort of, when they took it over as a British ship, in other words, in Belfast, yeah. They sort of did a bit of a refit. Do you remember that at all?
Not specifically, but each time we came in, we usually had a check through the boilers, a boiler clean, etc., and do quite a few jobs. You know, when we were doing the regular trip to Naples and back.
Well, let's go on to that, though, because these were a series of trips. They're called the KMF convoys.
Yeah, I didn't know that even, but anyway.
They went from December 43 through to October 44. You know, they were quite a thing. Very regular.
Oh, yeah.
What do you remember of them? What were they like? Because I think you start from Britain and go to...
I thought, after being on the Harvester, that was a piece of cake, those. You know, because we went out fairly quickly into Naples. You could go ashore in Naples. We might have probably only there a couple of days, but nevertheless. And then we'd come back again, and then you'd be in Belfast for a few days, and sometimes longer. And it was all as much as you're ever going to enjoy anything during the wartime. It was quite enjoyable, as far as I was concerned, anyway.
It was just a routine sailing for you.
Yeah, as far as I was concerned, that was it. Yeah, it was enjoyable compared to lots of the other trips I'd been on previously. And of course, when we first arrived in Naples, of course the Germans weren't all that far away, you know. But of course they're gradually getting pushed back further and further. But most of us thought it wasn't, you know, wasn't, most of the regulars. I mean, the people who are only in there for the hostilities, I mean, that would probably be the first time they'd done anything anyway, so they wouldn't have anything to compare it with, you see.
Now, you were escorting troop ships, weren't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right, yeah. I can't even remember how many of us there were doing it. You know, how many frigates doing it, to be quite honest. Yeah, I don't know the exact. Perhaps you might have information.
Do you remember anything in particular, any incidents, or was it pretty incident free?
No, to be quite honest, it was, as far as I remember, there was practically nothing exciting that I can remember. In fact, it was enjoyable, really, and I left. I think they only did one more trip after I left. I left in the September.
September 1944?
44, yeah. What happened was, when we were at...
Hang on a minute, because I don't want to... What about... Did you get ashore in Naples? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What was it like? Because it's supposed to be quite a nice place.
Well...
What was it like?
Well, it was peculiar in a way, because when you saw it... You saw it from the front and it looked beautiful. And you walked round the back of the first main street and it was shocking. Really shocking. You know, well, I can't describe it. You'd have to, I don't know what it's like now, but it was shocking, you know.
Slums, you mean?
Yeah, slummy sort of business. The front facade looked nice. And when you see it from the Bay of Naples and so forth, it looked beautiful. But when you got behind, shocking.
What did you do at ashore?
We used to go, they had a club for, I forget what they called it now, European Forces or something. You know, it was similar to NAFI, really, but they didn't call it NAFI. And nearly everybody would congregate in there. And the trouble was, or part of the trouble was, as far as I was concerned, was that I never drank much anyway. And normally they'd run out of beer and they'd just be selling wine. And of course, not being used to it, as far as I was concerned, you'd be sort of drinking wine as though it was half a pint of beer. And 9 times out of 10, I was sick afterwards. So I didn't keep that up very long, I'll tell you that. But that was it.
This canteen was all you really got. You didn't see much else.
Well, I didn't. No, I didn't. No. I didn't go ashore all that often anyway. But on the few occasions I did, I'd usually be with Phipps. And that was it. And he'd have a few drinks, and I'd have a few drinks. But as I say, I didn't really enjoy it. We might try to buy a few knick-knacks to take home with us, and that'd be about it. That was it.
Now, what about some? Did you have much of an opinion of some of the senior officers, just that you might have known? I think Lieutenant Commander White was the one while you were there.
Yeah.
The captain. What do you think of him?
Well, I don't know, to be quite honest, because I didn't see much of him, and I couldn't remember his name, actually. And he wasn't on there long, was he, before he was...
He was replaced by Lieutenant Commander Payne, or Plane. I'm not sure which it is.
Yeah, Payne, I think, yeah.
I don't know whether he made it. He was very tall.
That's right. Well, that's the only thing I remember about him. He was about 6 feet four or five, and he was an RMVR. And that's about it.
What about the other officers, Davidson and Buckle and that lot?
Didn't come across them much at all.
Were they good officers? Looking at them generally, was it a happy ship? Were they good officers?
Well, I've got the impression that it was, a reasonably happy ship. But then, I'm not really in a good position. The people who would know more about that, of course, would be the seamen branch, the upper deck branch. They're the people who could give you a better idea. I mean, we dealt with so we were lucky in having the engineer officer was a very nice person, and there you are. But I think it was a reasonably happy ship. I can't think of anything untoward, to be quite honest.
Now, how did you come to leave the ship? I mean, that was after quite a while, but it was September 1944. How did you leave?
Well, we had to go back to when we were in Bermuda. And I decided that I would sit the examination for Chief ERA, mainly because you didn't have to wait anywhere near so long. With the war being on, you might only have to wait a year or a couple of years, you see, instead of the usual 10 years. Anyway, so I took the examination in Bermuda, and you had a written examination. Engineering and mechanics, usually, and maths. They were the three main subjects. And then afterwards you'd have an interview, one of the officers. And so I sat the written paper, and then the chap who was interviewing me was a retired who'd been called back, Rear Admiral, Engineer Rear Admiral. And he was a very affable sort of a person. He wasn't one of these people who were trying to... trip you up. So I was lucky there, you see. So we went through the written paper first and sorted one or two things out, and then he asked me a couple of questions, and I was quite surprised in a way that he didn't go on and on, but he didn't. I was quite pleased. And so then and there he said, right, you've passed, and that was it, and I got a certificate saying I'd passed the examination.
Now that was September 1943 in Bermuda.
In Bermuda. Right. So, then I think it was, must have been nearly a year later, when I came through that was it. I'd been promoted to acting. You're only acting to start with for a while, you see. But I had to leave the ship because they already had a Chief ERA on there. You with me? So that's the reason I left the ship in September. In fact, I think it was the day after my birthday. I think I left on September the 25th. Anyway, it was in September, anyway.
Were you sorry to leave? I mean, how did you... Or were you just looking forward to getting on? I mean...
Yes and no. I was sorry to leave, really, because it was quite a good... as I said, we enjoyed the trip backwards and forwards. But on the other hand, I thought, well, I've been promoted, I'm going to get more pay, the usual sort of business, and wonder what's going to happen next sort of. And so it was a combination of yes and no. I didn't particularly... If it hadn't been for that, I wouldn't have minded staying on the ship. But that was it. I knew eventually that when it came through, I'd probably have to leave. And that was it.
So where did you leave the ship?
I left... We were at Belfast.
So where did you go to?
And then I went to barracks first, Chatham Barracks. And then... I think I got... If I remember rightly, they used to try to let you have sort of drafting leave if the conditions were suitable, you know. And so I think I had a couple of weeks leave, and then joined the Milne, HMS Milne, which was in Hull at the time, doing a bit of a refit. And
so you joined her in October.
Yeah, I think it was October or November. Anyway, I'm not, you know, I wouldn't pinpoint it. October, November, we'll say. October-November. I could check it up. But anyway, that's near enough. Yeah, 44. And
was HMS Milne? What type of ship was it? And you were acting CERA.
Well, the Milne was one of these very... powerful destroyers. There was the Milne, the Matchless, Musketeer, Marne. There was five or six of them all ago, but and they'd been on involved in the Russian convoys. But thank goodness I have.
And what did you think of her as compared to say something like the Calder or the Harvester?
Well, it was newer. It wasn't newer than the Calder, but it was new. Oh, I don't know. It was newer than the Harvester. It probably was slightly. It was a more powerful destroyer. Bigger. It looked the part more than the other two did. But apart from that, I mean, I wasn't all that worried about that side of it anyway. And the thing was, you see, in those days, in a flotilla of destroyers. Fleet destroyers, I think they called them. They had the senior officer would be a captain, and then they'd have the next senior would be a commander. And then, if there were six boats, four of them, the captains of four of them would be lieutenant commanders. And then the captain of one would be a commander, and the senior officer would be a captain. And that ship would be called Captain D, Captain Destroyer. You know, that particular... Now, the Milne was one of those. The captain of the Milne, I can't think of his name now.
Anyway. So he's a flotilla leader?
Flotilla leader, that's right. Yeah. And
do you know which flotilla it was?
Pardon?
Do you know the number of the flotilla, destroyer flotilla?
No. I've got a picture of the Milne somewhere. But anyway...
So what were your first impressions on joining her then?
Well, of course it was in dock and everything was all upside down, so I didn't really know. And we didn't know where we were going. Nobody seemed to have a clue. I suppose probably the captain knew, but I mean but no, the rest of us. Anyway, in the end, we went out to the Mediterranean. We left in December, if I remember rightly. Beginning of December, I think.
And where were you based in the Mediterranean?
Well, our main St. Angelo in Malta was the sort of the base barracks or ship, or you know, similar to the Caroline. It's where all the papers were held, presumably, and all our records. But we had a particular job at the time, was involved in them. We'd call in at places like Toulon and operate in the Gulf of Lyon, you know, around that area, and we were partly, all sorts of things like partly bombarding German troops that were being driven back, and also on the lookout for any foreign destroyers, or mind you, there weren't many of those around anyway because the Italians had capitulated. But and that was our job mainly, and we take it in turns. For there were usually, was there two of us or three, two of us at a time, I think. There was the Milne, the Meteor, Matchless, the Milne and the Matchless, I think. We two at a time were great, and then we'd come back into somewhere like maybe Toulon or Golf Juan, you know, near Cannes. But wouldn't go right in, we'd anchor out, you see. And we'd be doing that for a while, and then we'd... when did we first go to Malta?
So you were mainly operating off the South France, Southern France coast.
In Italy, yeah. We called in at Naples again, by the way. That area, around that area, the Germans were being driven back in Italy, you see. And so we were helping out in now and again. We'd be bombarding some of the shore positions and so forth and so on, or... and also on the lookout for foreign ships, etc., etc.
And now, what about life for you? What was you were the chief engineer ERA?
As this was the Captain V, they had a chief ERA of the ship, and they also had, and this was me, a chief ERA boilermaker. He was entitled to have a chief ERA boilermaker on board, and my job was if anything happened to the boilers of any of the rest of the ships in the flotilla, I was the one who'd have to go over and check it out. We had a Commander E on board the Milne. Now he was obviously he had the final say because he was the commander, but I was the one who would examine the boilers of if there was anything wrong with any of the other ships. So, but they had a chief ERA on the Milne who'd been on there a long time, and he'd been a chief ERA longer than me, but he was the chief ERA of the ship. He was responsible for making sure the watch keeping and all the rest of it. My job was just the boilers of all the...
Were you disappointed?
No. That's what I expected to... You know, once I knew where I was going, I knew that was going to be my job.
Were there any particular problems with the boilers, or was it a fairly an easy job?
Well, the wear and waste test was that you...
The boiler test?
The boiler test, yeah. You would examine the tubes. You'd look in the top drum to start with. And you'd pick out... a row, it's usually a row, a complete row of tubes, and you would mark them off, and they would be knocked out by probably the ship's staff, or if you were in dockyard people would do it, and the tubes would be examined, and as a result of the examination of those tubes, you'd have a rough idea of what the state of the rest of the tubes were, you see. And that was it. And these wear and waste tests were carried out at certain periods of time. So it's laid down, Admiralty fleet orders, etc., etc. And that was part of the job of the chief boilermaker, chief ERA boilermaker.
Any other particular tests or things you had to do?
Those were the main things, and of course then when the jobs were done you had to be there to check that there were no leaks and make sure everything was in order before the boiler became operational again.
But you'd go to sea with the Milne?
Oh yes, I was at all the time the Milne was at sea, I was on it. Yeah.
Would you be acting as an ERA, sort of chief ERA? What would you be doing
while I was there, I'd be taking, we used to take tests of the water from each boiler to make sure that there were no impurities. We had certain instruments to check that the water was in order.
What could be wrong with it?
Well, you could get salt, too much salt in the water, etc., etc. That was the main thing. You got a bit worried then, because if you had too much salt in the water,